on 1116 SEN, the ultimate rap with Tony Shebeki.
Seven past nine. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Ultimate Wrap here on 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport, where we bring you up to date with everything that's happened in the world of sport so far overnight and throughout the weekend, heading into some big action today as well. And joining me today to do it, we say a very good morning to our old mate, George Danikian. Yasu, George.
Yasu, mate. Good morning. Can I just say, I think you're a little delusional. It's cold.
It's beautiful out there.
Fresh. It's bracing. It's all of those things. Beautiful, not quite.
I'll tell you what, it's a little bit warmer than what it was like when I hopped off an aeroplane coming back from Tassie last night, and we landed at 10 minutes to midnight at Melbourne Airport, out of the back door of a Jetstar, 321, and walking the tarmac. It had to have been zero, for sure. It was freezing.
So you're getting an early start on the snow season. Well done.
Exactly.
Without leaving the city.
Exactly. Check out the June issue of Inside Footy with Essendon's Brendan Goddard on the cover. And you could also read some of the
300 game, eh?
Yeah, exactly. What a great weekend it was for him.
He wasn't happy, though. They lost.
Well, I don't blame him either. And to tell us how they lost and how others won, let's say a very good morning to SEN Inside Football's Brett Anderson. BA, good morning.
Hello, boys. Shebeksi, you created radio history just then. Pleasant and 5 degrees.
I told you. Delusional, I said.
But it is pleasant. Oh. It's just cold.
No, it's cold.
Brett, I'm with you, mate.
I've been tucked in a beautiful, warm SEN studio for the last 2.5 hours. I've lost all sense of reality.
Yeah, you know, exactly right, Shebeksi. But you should be happy with the Tigers last night.
Hey, I am happy about the Tigers. The first 10 minutes of that third quarter was some of the best footy that we've seen this year.
Yeah, they blew the game apart, didn't they, last night? Probably showed the last 2 weeks a real sign of maturity in terms of where they're at as a group. And against the team who's had their measure last night in North Melbourne, who I think many might have tipped to win that game based on North's form and just the recent history between the two clubs. The Tigers are fantastic, and they were led by a bloke whose contract just seems to get bigger and bigger with each outing. I think that was a little come and look at the shop window, a bit of what Dusty Martin could do last night against one of his suitors.
Well, there was that sign out in the crowd, come to North Melbourne, or come to the Kangaroos, Dusty, I think people were holding up.
Mate, Brett, I want to know, how is it that the Kangaroos have got so much money to play with?
I think everyone's got a lot of money to play with, George. The Roos, obviously, with the veterans that they culled last year, they'd only be paying probably the minimum amount on the salary cap this year, and it means they've got a war chest moving forward. And probably, you look at Andrew Swallow and guys like that, you'd probably think that potentially they would move on at the end of the year, creating some more room. And it's just everyone's got a lot of money with the new potential CBA coming through, so they're not the only ones. There's clubs that I think a few people out there would be surprised at how much money they've got, but that's just the nature that we live in at the moment. And the times that we've got with this new CBA coming in, everyone's cashed up.
Well, the delightful thing for me as a Carlton man, three of our young guns look like they've just been added to the club for a little bit longer. They've re-signed, which is fantastic. Yeah, and it must give a lot of Blues fans hope and encouragement about what's coming. Maybe not next year, but the year after.
Yeah, I think so too, George. I think to be able to get your kids signed up nice and early. And I think Samo Petrescu-Seaton was an extended deal. It was till the end of the
year. Yeah, he's almost 4 years, isn't it? Yeah.
So that's fantastic for them. And, I think it's great news for Carlton too to have those young fellas tied up. And I think you're going to see a lot of clubs around the competition do the same thing and try to tie their kids up. And ideally, Brisbane, a few of those teams in the northern markets can do the same thing, because I think as footy fans, we don't want to see kids leaving after 2 years. I spoke to Brendan Goddard about this in Inside Footy this month, and he had some pretty strong thoughts on what rookie contracts should be, having gone through it himself as a number one draft pick. And as we revealed the other day on the website, but also in this article, that Collingwood had a massive dip at him after his second year at St Kilda. So it
compromises the draft, doesn't it? If you're going out there to normalise or try and equalise the system, and every couple of years you're adding a different boost to the system, then suddenly all those wonderful plans go up for naught.
Yeah, I guess some would say, well, it's up to the clubs to get their house in order and make sure the players don't want to leave in the first place.
Oh, that's true.
I think there does need to be some protection. Look, every draft pick that you bring in is a multi-million dollar investment to your club. and to have them walk out the door after 2 years. Look, as a Melbourne supporter, I saw it with Tom Scully, which was obviously a different situation with the expansion teams coming in, but it really deflates you as a supporter. And I know Brisbane supporters are filthy on it at the moment, and they keep asking me the question about kids in this draft and, well, what's the point if they just want to go home in a year's time? And they've got a good point. So I'd say extend draftee contracts for first round to maybe 3 years with an option for a fourth, and third round, second round, make it 3 years and so forth. But just to give the club a little bit more security. It's an interesting time that we live in, though.
So, Tigers good against North Melbourne. GWS got the job done against Essendon. Brendan Goddard's 300th game. The Bombers weren't shamed.
No, they were okay. They were good, the Bombers, yes. I think Essendon fans would be really happy with what they saw. Like, ideally, you want to win the game, but playing against GWS up there, even though they've got injury issues, it's a damn tough ask. And you look at some of the names and you think, well, we don't know too many of those GWS players, but they're all very talented when they bring them into that senior team. And Harry Perriman kicked his first goal yesterday, and we've seen Tim Taranto play some good footy this year. Harry Himmelberg did some nice things. So they've just got talent in abundance. But I thought the Bombers were quite good. They stuck at the task really well. Michael Hurley had another good game down back. Brendan Goddard probably wasn't at his absolute best yesterday. We saw the halftime little blow-up where he knocked lollies over. But I think Brendan's a bit misunderstood. And having known him for nearly 15 years now, he just demands excellence. He doesn't accept mediocrity, and he doesn't suffer fools. I think I tweeted that last night. He just wants the best. He wants to win. He's so driven, so passionate, and sometimes it can come across and in a negative way, I guess. But that's just BJ. He demands the absolute best out of his team.
Would have loved him at the Blues, because we had him and we had to give him up. So we know we would have loved that spirit, that fight.
Absolutely. And I think Carlton is still, in many ways, Carlton is still getting back from losing those.
Correct.
The inability to trade, and I think Ian Collins at the time said it'll set the club back 10 years. Well, in some ways, it might set them back 20 years, because they're still recovering, and it's been unfortunate for them. I think a few other clubs might have pointed at Carlton's plight in that time when they were up for draft sanctions as well. I think the Bombers would have looked at it and gone, well, look what it's done to Carlton. It absolutely tears the heart out of you. So, but the Bombers have bounced back okay, and yeah, look, they had a really strong performance, but weren't able to get the points. It just shows to me GWS are the flag favourites, and whilst we talk about even seasons, they're still absolutely the team to beat.
So just on that then, Brett, and let's look at a current scenario. We talk about Carlton losing those early draft picks in that year for them when they had to serve their penalty. Essendon also a similar. With Hawthorn, it's a self-inflicted type penalty, but similar, isn't it? The fact that they've traded off those early draft picks for the future. Does that mean that they could find themselves in a bit of a position the same as those teams due to the fact that they won't have those first-round draft picks?
Yeah, I think they're probably in a different spot slightly, Shebex, in that they've still got a bit of that top-end talent. You have a look at that Carlton side. They really had to gut back in 2002, I think it was. So.
Yeah, and Clarkson's no dummy. He's a smart cookie.
Absolutely. And look, free agency's really freed things up. Carlton only had one option to bring players in, and that was through the trade period, I guess, during that period. But they were even banned from that from memory in that year. So they really had the double dip, where at least there's more options for Hawthorn. And whilst not picking till probably pick 40-odd in this draft isn't ideal, I think they'll find a way to get back into some of the early picks. And I think I said after round one or round two that they should look at trading one of those premiership players and put up Jack Gunston's name. And I continue to hear it now that it sort of gains a bit more traction. I think that his name's bobbed up a little bit more. But they're in an interesting spot. And I think that it's going to be really intriguing to see what they do, I think, at the end of this year, Hawthorn. Some of those kids that they've started to blood this year have shown a bit. Ryan Burton's been fantastic, obviously. And at different times, I think Blake Hardwick's shown a little bit as well. And they've still got a few more to sort of filter in. But certainly, I don't think that they're going to be in the same spot as what a Carlton were. The system's just changed so much from that time.
They were disappointing, though, against Port Adelaide.
They were pretty ordinary, weren't they? Yeah. They got 3 points in the first half. That was their lowest score in history in a first half, which I find remarkable considering, obviously, they came into the competition in 1925. So you would have thought there might have been some lower scores in those early days where they were really one of the lower teams in the comp. I think it took 17 years for them to beat Collingwood. But they were terrible. But on the flip side, Port were really good, and probably what we expected from Port. I thought they'd win that game really comfortably. They took the foot off the pedal after half-time. Hawthorn improved, though. They shut the game down a little bit more. They took Port's run away. So I guess that's a positive to take out of the second half for the Hawks. Charlie Dixon, though, how good was he after a week of, I guess, a bit of pressure with everything that went on with his set shot against Geelong that he was called to play on? That was probably the best game he's played in Port Adelaide colours. He was the dominant figure opposed to Josh Gibson in attack. And I think Port, they're right up there. I think they're a top four contender. Their percentage is really healthy, and I think that's a good point as to where they sit. I think a few people will look at who they've beaten and say, well, they've only beaten the five teams at the bottom of the ladder. But they've been really competitive against the teams at the top too, whether trailing, whether leading at three-quarter time or leading it deep into the second half of periods against all the good teams, including GWS.
Geelong and Adelaide was not a bad game at Skilled Stadium. The Cats coming out on top. Patrick Dangerfield again just keeps racking them up. He had a couple of bad weeks there, didn't he? But he has made up for it so much since that period.
Yeah, he has. And look, that was probably, I thought, Geelong's best win for the year. They've probably been criticised a little bit over the last couple of weeks, or questions have been asked about whether they were just winning games because that was at Simmons, and they did get a couple of favourable weeks of some umpiring decisions, but in the end they found ways to win those games. But on Friday night, I thought that was their best performance. They were outstanding, and I don't think it's any coincidence that that their form has improved and they're getting stronger and stronger since Scott Selwood's come back into the team. Just his ability to put physical pressure on. I think he's laid 44 tackles in 3 weeks. Just he can do the roles that maybe they haven't had that type of player to do in the past, and to be able to protect his brother, but also protect Paddy Dangerfield has been really important for them. So it's always handy when you've got two champions, and Joel Selwood looked like he was knocked senseless early in that game with a big gash above his right ear, but came back and was one of the best players on the ground. And it shows that when you've got two champions, anything can potentially happen.
And just tell me that there's no blueprint to beat the Crows, please.
I don't know if there's a blueprint, but certainly Roy Sloan, the tag on Roy Sloan that Melbourne and North played worked. But I think there's a blueprint in some ways to beat most teams, George. It's just different ways you go about it. And some it might be a really strong blueprint.
So the challenge for the Crows would be to assess what's going on and try and find a way to beat that system.
Go to plan B.
Or plan C.
Yeah. Exactly.
I think they're very structured, Adelaide, in terms of the way they set up and play their footy and move the ball and even their positioning. You look at that forward line. Maybe they just need to be a little bit more versatile with what they do, especially if things aren't going their way in midfield. If a few players aren't getting their hands on it, can they play them somewhere else? Can they roll them off a half-back flank? Can they put them forward? But look, I think they're certainly going to be still there when the whips get cracking at the end of the year, losing to Geelong. And it's never easy to go down there. And their record against the Cats isn't flash either. It's another team who have had the wood over them. Even when they go and play them in Adelaide, the Cats have got a really good record there as well. So,
They haven't beaten them at Simmons since 2003.
Yeah, since Gary Ayres, that incident in the coach's box where he gave the bird, I think it
correct.
Was.
Oh, yeah. Correct.
Supporters at the front. And, having been in that
Roo was box, still playing.
Having been in that coach's box with those Geelong supporters in the front in the past, so I know exactly what he was doing. they're pretty vocal, and they used to tap on the front window of the box and let you know how the Cats were travelling, especially when they were giving you a hiding. So I can relate to Ayrsy in that sense, but geez, it was a long time ago.
And the final one, mate, a great performance at the end and a couple of nice big straight kicks, or one especially from Peter Wright, 2 metre Peter, a product of Matawan College, might I say, to get over the West Coast Eagles by 3 points.
You boys tipped Gold Coast in that game?
I did.
Yep. I think a lot of people might have tipped Gold Coast. It's got no faith in the Eagles, especially with John Kennedy there. And the rest of their forwards didn't really stand up. It was left to their midfield to really carry the cannon. Elliot Yeo was the one who pushed forward and kicked some goals. But yeah, the Gold Coast were really good, and in some ways, I think they deserved to win it. Look, at the end there, when Peter Wright kicked the goal, you probably thought, oh, geez, they're getting what they've genuinely deserved in this game, because it looked for a period there like the Eagles might find a way to pinch it. But I thought Gold Coast were the better team throughout. Gary Ablett really good again, and they had some really strong performers. So I think it's great for Rocket too. He's had
a big smile for Rocket.
Yeah, tough couple of weeks. I'm sure the massage will feel a bit better than he had for a game last week. Last week with his crooked neck, but no, a good win for Gold Coast, and it really gives them some mental satisfaction, I guess, that their best is good enough, and if they sort of put it all together, they're a decent side, and we've seen that at stages this year. And to beat West Coast, who obviously were potentially a top four contender, but certainly a top eight contender, I think it validates some of the things that they're doing. And look, it's not going to be easy. They're going to have their steps backwards, and this was one of those steps forward, and hopefully a few of their players can buy into that. We're hearing that Stephen May is very close to re-signing with the Gold Coast, so that's fantastic news for the Suns. And, I think it's only positive what they can take out of that win yesterday.
Who's under more pressure, Rodney Eade or Nathan Buckley?
Oh, probably Bucks because he's coaching Collingwood for no other reason that he's coaching the biggest club in the country.
Yeah.
Look, I really rate Nathan Buckley, and I think he's a really good coach. I know a lot of Collingwood supporters would disagree with that, and they'd say, look at the record. But things that you hear internally and how much his players like him, and there have been some real circumstances around the reasons behind Collingwood losses and reasons behind poor seasons, I guess, over the last couple of years. And it's not to provide an excuse, but I think everything needs to be taken in context when you delve into it really deeply. But certainly, he's got a big challenge ahead of him. And look, a win today against Fremantle would be a really strong point to come back and go on the road and have a win. And they've got a pretty good record when they do travel the Pies, especially over in Perth. So looking forward to that one this afternoon.
Good on you, buddy. Always great to catch up with you, Brett. We appreciate your time. We'll do it again next week.
No worries, guys. Enjoy your Sunday.
Thank you. I will, after Richmond had a nice win last night.
It makes
Sunday so much more pleasant, doesn't it?
By the way, off the SMS list, a couple of smarties and some people who know their football just suggesting that maybe the West Coast Eagles are getting on the older side of the player list at the moment. They might have one of the oldest lists in the competition.
No doubt, too. VFL results from yesterday saw Essendon defeat North Ballarat by 38 points. Werribee over Richmond by 5 points. And Port Melbourne had a draw with Box Hill, 108 each. And in the TAC Cup, it was Gippsland by 5 points over Geelong. The Eastern Rangers by 1 point over Sandringham. And Oakley easily accounting for the Western Jets by 53 points.
Mate, at the moment, I'm just sitting here luxuriating in the fact that the Vixens are up there in a grand final.
Yeah, they are too. We'll talk more about that a little bit later on too, after this.
So you can talk all you like about your little Richmond.
No, I'm happy with the Vixens. I'm a Vixens man myself. Oh. Brett Phillips to talk some tennis, and then we're going to talk some netball and also a little bit of NBA as well. So plenty more to come right here.
You're going to mention that Real has upset Juve?
We're going to do that also towards the end of the program with Michael Sapani. There's so much to cover, George. Hang in there.
God, right.
23 past 9.
16 SEN, the ultimate rap with Tony Shebeki.
And at 28 minutes past 9, George Zanikin also joining me in the studio. And George, I want to have a chat about our great friends out at Northern Motors and just some amazing deals that they have on offer, especially coming towards the end of financial year. If you want a deal, Northern Motors Group is the place to go.
Yep, I've got an announcement to make. Our good mate Nick and the team from Northern Motor Group have got an awesome deal for you. Listen up. They're offering unbeatably low finance deals right across all their great brands. I'm talking Nissan, Jeep, Fiat, Chrysler, Kia and Isuzu. Just mention myself, that's George Denikin from The Ultimate Wrap, and they'll sort you out with a fantastic deal. So don't delay. Nick and his team are waiting. They're at Grimshaw Street at Bundoora. So what you do is head on down to Northern Motor Group for massive, as Tony said, massive end of financial year savings and grab your dream car today.
That is the place to go at 29 minutes past 9, a French Open update. Thanks to Jets 24/7 Fitness, no locking contracts with 48 gyms in Victoria, 250 gyms worldwide. Head to jets.com.au. One man that's been going to Jets on a regular basis, he's looking fantastic at the moment, is Brett Phillips, our SEN tennis commentator. Good morning, BP.
BP.
A bit like your weather update, Shebex.
Oh, see, they're all recovering, aren't they?
What is wrong with 5 degrees? It can be pleasant at 5.
No. Listen to Brett, mate. Listen to Brett. Tell him, mate.
Well, while it might be cold here, BP, the tennis is hotting up over there in Roland Garros, and Sam Stosur, the only Aussie left, looking to get herself into the quarterfinals.
Yeah, absolutely, Shebex. Look, the draw is certainly open for Sam to do some damage. There's no doubt about that. She's going to play second up tonight, so pretty reasonable time to watch this match on Fox Sports. She's got Yelena Ostapenko. Now, this is a young Latvian girl. She's only 19. She's got a bit of pretty fiery head on court. She's got a really solid game. She's had a pretty good year, and she's been a three-time finalist on the WTA Tour. So she's certainly coming as one of the next generation players, but Stosur is playing some really solid tennis, hasn't dropped a set in this tournament. If she wins here, I mean, it certainly gets harder. She'd play the winner of Wozniacki and Kuznetsova. That would be a tough matchup, but gee, Sam, you know, with what's left in the draw on the women's side, is as good a chance as anyone to maybe win a French Open.
How exciting would that be after the sort of punishment and grief from critics that she's had over the last year or two? This would be some sort of show.
And deserved. Let's just do it.
I sometimes think we forget very much how much pressure is on these tennis players who travel the world, and they've got they live out of a suitcase. Brett will tell you this. And they have nobody basically sitting on their shoulder giving them the sort of support and mentoring that all of the other top ones have. And I think she's doing a tremendous job. I think we're a little bit too harsh on her, especially at home. We put enormous pressure on her.
Yeah, look. Well, unfortunately, that's probably where we judge you, George. And I'm as guilty as anyone. And I sometimes pull myself back because I think we have to look at the big picture of it. Unfortunately, she's never played well in Australia. So she gets the instant cross next to her name that she can't perform. But, you know, 450-odd weeks as our number one female player, 9 WTA titles. She's won a major. Gee, she could win a French Open. I mean, you know, not many players can say they've won 2 Grand Slam titles. So I think in the end, she'll probably walk away with a pretty decent career. But every time we see Sam play, and when she loses, we probably think in the back of her mind, the way she loses, we just can't sort of cop that because she's built physically as imposing as anyone on the women's tour. She's got a big game, and unfortunately, there's probably been a few technical flaws at times that prevents her from being at the absolute pointy end. But, you know, it's a brutal sport. There's a lot of... It's competitive. There's a lot of very good players on the WTA Tour. Look at the amount of women's seeds that continually fall at majors, and, you know, she's been roundabout in the mix all the time.
Brett, I think... Is it her game? She needs a bit more time to play the shot or manufacture the shot that she needs, and on the faster surfaces she struggles, and maybe on the French on the clay it basically suits her game, so to speak, a bit more than the other surfaces and the other tournaments.
Absolutely spot on, George. I mean, if there's the biggest weakness for mine in the Sam Stosur game is her movement, her side-to-side movement. So on the grass where the ball is skidding on, I mean, the hard courts, you know, look, have certainly been kind to her. She's won a US Open on that hard court surface. But the clay, the ball certainly sits up, and she wants time to get onto that forehand. Her backhand actually has been... you know, as prolific in this tournament, particularly that shot up the line. She can get a big kick serve going, which, you know, often has players in all sorts of trouble outside the tram lines. She's always, you know, think back to her early days, she had great success playing doubles tennis, Sam Stosur, winning titles, and so she's competent coming into the net as well. So, look, no doubt clay is her best surface, and traditionally the results are there to see. She performs her best at this time of the year.
Give us a recap of week one, and don't leave out the ugly parts.
Well, look, it's a really interesting stage, Shebex. I mean, Andy Murray, look, has certainly struggled this year as the world number one.
He was
so
good
many
last night,
points
though.
In the bank. He was outstanding. Yeah, 7-6, 7-5, and then 6-love in the third against Del Potro, who, look, has made a great comeback to tennis and is a mighty competitor, one more team. But Andy got into a nice groove last night, and you can't say that's been the case this year. I mean, Stan Wawrinka hasn't dropped a set in this tournament. He always, I suppose, of the top five is the one that just sort of sneaks under the guard. Stan looking for a second French Open. You've got to say Nadal... He's certainly in the driver's seat. Djokovic, with the Agassi factor, has been solid enough to get through the first week. And on the women's side, look, it's you know, throw the door open. If Sam can't win it, I mean, the match that I'm looking forward to tonight is Garbiñe Muguruza. So she's the French Open reigning champion, hasn't won a title on the tour since prevailing at Roland Garros 12 months ago, taking on Kristina Mladenovic, who's the French player who's risen to number 13 in the world in singles. Every one of her matches has been filled with drama in this French Open. Going down to the wire, she's got the crowd behind her. She won her last match against Rogers, 8-6 in the third. That match could go a long way to deciding who maybe wins the French if Sam can't get up. But we've seen plenty of upsets from an Australian perspective. Yeah, look, obviously always the focus on, you know, Nick Kyrgios. Look, he wasn't at his best. He certainly isn't at his best physically, and that's still a work in progress. Until he gets that body in total match condition, he won't be able to compete in a sustainable manner on the tour all year round.
And mentally, it would seem also BP.
Look, there's plenty of players. Yeah, look, that's the criticism, and I've been critical. But, I mean, you know, I watch so many matches of the French, I can tell you we're probably up to nearly 100 rackets being smashed this week and, you know, all sorts of things going on. I mean, the French players have got themselves into trouble over there. We think Nick Kyrgios is bad at times, but we've got a couple of young French players that didn't endear themselves too well and have copped some massive fines. In fact, the French Open this week have handed out a truckload of fines to players for some of their on-court behaviour. And as my co-host on the first serve, Paul Aitken, will tell you, he often refers to them as man babies, and that they're in this very surreal world, sometimes haven't quite developed as people, maybe developed as tennis players, but not quite as people. So we're going to see some things that maybe leave us a little bit perplexed at times.
What about that special person, Del Potro, and his antics or his support of his of his opponent who got injured?
Yep.
And was in tears, and Del Potro crossed the net, walked over, put his arms around him,
give
and
him
said, mate, yeah, big hug. Brought him back. Actually, he packed his own kit for him. It's fantastic. And I just thought that, I thought that was mighty. I mean, really, these guys are competitive. Every match means a lot to them. And here he was. He saw the how distressed his opponent was, and he couldn't do any much more than carry him out. Mm. No, he's fantastic.
George, yeah, beautifully said. I mean, look, Juan Martin Del Potro, one of the most popular players on the tour. Everyone has been crying for him to come back. He's had that debilitating wrist injury. Won a US Open when he knocked over Federer a number of years ago now. He was taking on Nicolas Almagro, the Spaniard, who unfortunately has had so many injuries in the last couple of years. So he was pretty distraught because you want to perform at the majors, and Del Potro, he's just a ripper. I mean, the Argentinians love him, but the world loves Juan Martin. And when he won that Davis Cup for Argentina, in a year filled with so many great sports stories, it probably got lost a little bit, but it was a significant moment. And he's we hope that he can obviously try and get back to the top echelon of men's tennis.
Look forward to catching you next Sunday morning, BP, when we start talking about the women's and men's finals.
Indeed, guys. First serve tonight from 10 o'clock, so we'll go live to Paris. Leo Schlink, chief tennis writer for the Herald Sun, will be on the ground over there. And Justin Gimelstob, who does some great work for the Tennis Channel, has got plenty of opinions, the American commentator. He'll join us tonight after Finney's final siren, Shibix.
Brett Phillips, our SEN tennis commentator, a French Open update with him, thanks to Jets 24/7 Fitness. No locking contracts with 48 gyms in Victoria and 250 gyms worldwide. Head to jets.com.au. NRL results from the weekend so far. The Melbourne Storm, the mighty Melbourne Storm, and Billy Slater, did he not send
a message?
Middle finger out to hashtag should have picked Billy.
They monstered was great. The opponents. They monstered them.
40-12, the Storm over Newcastle. Parramatta 32, Warriors 24. St George Illawarra 16, West Tigers 12.
Thank you to my Dragons.
Sydney Roosters 18, Brisbane 16, North Queensland 20, and the Gold Coast 8 sees Melbourne on top with 22 points. Cronulla second, St George Illawarra third, tied with the Sydney Roosters all on 18 points. Those two teams, Cronulla on 20 and the Melbourne Storm on 22. At the moment, Newcastle sitting on the bottom of the ladder with 6 points. A break. We'll be back to talk netball and NBA in just one tick.
On 11.16 SEN, the ultimate rap with Tony Shebeki.
Hey. 20-10 here on the ultimate rap. George Zanikin joining me as well in the studio. And George, we were talking about netball before. Let's talk a little bit more about it as we catch up with Michael Hutchison from Netball Scoop. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, how are we?
Very well,
mate,
thank
you. We're good, and before you jump up and say the Vixens did lose, it's okay. A loss this time is key because all the players will reassess. You betcha. In the words of Paul Keating, it's the one they had to have. Yeah.
Look, I probably wouldn't agree with that, but They've got another week to redeem themselves, I guess, in the prelim final this week.
Just watch.
The scores were the Lightning 56 defeating the Vixens 55. The Giants against the Magpies, it was 52-51. So one goal separating both games. The Magpies now out of finals contention. The Giants go on to play the Vixens, the Lightning through to the final.
Yeah, they do. I think it probably went to script. I think Netball Australia would be rubbing their hands with glee to be able to get to one goal games with that. And perhaps probably a little bit unexpected. I think a lot of people thought the Magpies would probably hit their straps and, you know, had found their starting seven heading into the semi-final. And likewise, the Vixens, you know, hosting a home final that people probably would have thought that the Vixens would have come through as well. So for two, I guess, sort of upsets in a sense. I think that, you know, keeps the competition really interesting.
It will be very interesting next week, and I hope you can ring up and we can chat about it again.
Oh, look, my voice might be shot next week.
Take us through it is the inaugural year of this competition here in Australia after having been with New Zealand for so long. It would seem from the crowd numbers that interest hasn't
quite peaked.
Yeah,
has it?
Well, it hasn't got right to the top, but it hasn't been disastrous either, I don't think.
No, I think the crowds have been pretty solid. I think there'll be a lot of tinkering and thought going in from Netball Australia into next year. I think the time slots probably didn't work for a lot of people as well. 8:45 on a Saturday night when you've got young kids who have probably been out playing netball on Saturday, you know, all day, and then to head into the city for, you know, a game or two, if it's a doubleheader, that's probably been a bit tough. And yesterday's time slot at 4:00 probably wasn't ideal either for Melbourne, because I think there was less than 4,000 at Margaret Court yesterday. So, but yeah, there's lots of tinkering to be done with the competition, and I'm sure next year will be even better.
What about the TV numbers? If we haven't got those the ground or the attendance records sorted, what about the TV feedback? Has it been positive? Have the numbers there grown?
Netball Australia have been really pleased with the numbers, and I guess being on Gem and being able to be streamed worldwide with the Netball Live app, that has opened up a whole new audience, I guess, for the sport, which has been really good. I think if netball is really going to survive in this country and really push through that professionalism barrier in terms of remuneration for the players, then it's going to need to be shown on free-to-air. So step by step, I think there's certainly a big leap in improvement this year, and certainly having the grand final being able to be shown live on Nine on the 17th of June is another big milestone for the sport too.
Were you impressed by the Giants' comeback?
Yeah, I was. I wasn't unsurprised. I think Christina Bryce, that was her first full game for the Giants this season. It was probably a little bit of a rabbit out of the hat from Julie Fitzgerald, but that paid dividends. And moving Susan Pettit to wing attack, who has, for her whole career, you know, 12 years at the elite level playing in the goal circle, to move out to wing attack, and for that to fruitful for them, I think that was clever coaching from Julie. But it was a seesawing game, so it was really whoever was going to be in front of the scoreboard when 60 minutes was up, rather than a team that was really going to run away with it. Collingwood led by a couple of goals with 7 minutes to go, and then only scored 3 goals in the last 7 minutes, and the Giants scored 10. So there were certain times throughout the game I thought the Magpies probably took the foot off the pedal a little bit, and probably needed to continue to, you know, go for the intercepts, go for the deflections, try and continue to turn over ball rather than save the game for themselves, and that's probably where they lost it.
Yeah, it certainly didn't. It's been a great comeback also by the Giants, who of course lost their captain Kim Green earlier on in the season with an ACL injury, and to lose a star player like that and still get yourself this deep into the series.
They've probably got a T-shirt underneath their outfits and it's got, "We're doing it for Kim."
Yeah, possibly. Well, they could have two.
It wouldn't surprise me. Yeah, they've thrown a couple of players in there, Taylor Davies and Sarah Wall, since Kim's injury. And Susan Pettit's probably suited there most, and it's certainly fit enough and experienced enough to run out the game at wing attack. And certainly by, you know, being a shooter herself, she knows how the ball, she likes to receive the ball as a shooter, and that's held her in good stead to be able to feed, you know, two shooters in the circle.
Great to catch up, Michael. We'll do it again next week when we talk about the grand final.
Yeah, and the Vixens will be there. Can't wait.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
You better.
Fingers crossed. Good on you, mate. Thanks, Michael Hutchinson. I nearly called him Michael Hutchinson. A little bit of a faux pas. Joining us from Netball Scoop.
What, he can sing, can he?
Well, I don't know. We didn't ask him, did we? Let's talk some basketball, because there's just a big final series happening over in the States at the moment.
What you think?
Carlin Gay from NBA Australia joins us. Carlin, the Warriors win the first game 113-91. That was an absolute shellacking, but if anyone thinks that that is the end of the Cavs, you've got another thing coming.
You're absolutely right, guys. Good morning to you both, George and Tony. And I was half expecting you guys to mess up my name, but we're okay now. So, but in saying that, it was a blowout on the scoreline, no question about it. But I was just telling Luke off the air that I thought the Cavs beat themselves a little bit in that game.
Oh, 20 turnovers, mate.
Yeah, 20 turnovers. They didn't rebound the ball well, and that's really where, you know, they had the advantage, or most thought they had the advantage going into the series. They didn't defend at all. There was a layup drill in the first half. So there's a lot that they can fix to get back into the series. The problem is that there's a small, you know, margin for error, and you're playing probably one of the best offensive teams we've ever seen play basketball.
So I was going to say, Mr. Durant is looking supreme at the moment, isn't he?
He hasn't. I don't think he could have played better on Friday. I think that was probably one of his best games of his life. Both ends of the floor. We could talk about the offense all day, but he really guarded well, and I think he set the tone for the rest of the team to kind of follow. When your best player goes out there and, you know, defends as well as he scores, that energizes the entire team, all 12 men. So if he can continue this level of play throughout, it's going to be quicker, you know, than most people thought. I said Warriors in six.
You said in five, didn't you?
Yeah, I said in five originally.
I said seven.
I said six because I had respect for LeBron James. But I think I was discounting the fact that Kevin Durant is, you know, the second best player in the league, in the world, potentially. And unless we, you know, haven't dug someone up under, you know, a lot of the go ahead.
On that, Carlin, I was going to say, if he's the second best player in the league and possibly the world, am I right in saying that he hasn't been nominated for the league MVP?
Well, he did miss time. He did miss 19 games towards the end of the season, and that normally, you know, gets taken into consideration.
Carlin, he was just freshening up.
Yeah, that's exactly what he was doing. He was basically giving the league a chance to catch the Warriors in the Western Conference, and the Spurs made it interesting. But when he has, you know, when you look at the roster that he has, it's tough to really say that even though he is the second best player in the league, that he has to do more than what Russell Westbrook did or what James Harden did with the talent they have around them. So most valuable player, I guess it's so subjective. You know, you really should give it to LeBron James every year. Mm. But I think the one that matters is the finals MVP. And I think Kevin Durant is playing himself into perfect position to get that award. And that's the one that everybody wants.
Just to remind everyone how tall he is again.
Oh, he's only 6'11".
Only, baby.
7'7" foot wingspan. This guy is, you know,
he's a giant.
He's a little person. You know,
but he plays like a little person.
Oh yeah,
he does. Doesn't he?
Yeah,
you know, yeah. All that coordination wrapped in a 7-foot body. Love it.
Amazing. Hey, I normally don't do this, Carl, and read things straight off the SMS and ask you, I guess, if I haven't seen it myself. But someone's asking me to ask you about Rihanna at game one. What happened there?
Oh well, Rihanna was.
She turned up.
She did, and she's a huge Cavaliers fan, a huge LeBron James fan.
Yeah.
And apparently Kevin Durant shot a three right in her face,
correct,
turned around, and winked at her. So, I mean, I don't blame him.
It's like the MJ shrug. Carlin, it's like that fabulous MJ shrug, you know, years ago.
Today's the anniversary, actually, of that.
Is that right?
That famous shrug.
It's
the anniversary. So you're right on money with that. But I would wink at Rihanna if I had the chance myself. So I choose not blame her.
I don't think she'd look at me.
There was a wonderful ESPN. I'm not sure if it was a 30 and 30 or a smaller thing, but it was I can't remember the exact details. You might know, Carlin, but it was about the Knicks playing someone in a final series about 20 years ago, the Pacers, and it was a Spike Milligan shrug. The banter between Spike and who was the player? Reggie Miller.
Reggie Miller, mate.
The great Reggie Miller. He's AKA the Nick Killer. Him and Spike Lee apparently are friends now, but that banter was, you know, legendary. And poor Spike Lee, because he has, you know, I don't know if he pays for those tickets, but he's seen a lot of garbage basketball over the last couple of years. He hasn't really gotten a return on an investment since those 90s teams. But, you know, those are classic games. So hopefully, I don't know what celebrity turns up next. It used to be Jack Nicholson with the Lakers. I would like to see Rihanna more often, to be honest with you. That's just me personally. I'm just putting it out there.
Gigi Hadid, mate.
Chrissy Teigen, you know, we can get Chrissy Teigen out there. Whoever needs to be there, just fill the front row with the, you know, beautiful people. Everybody would be happy.
Exactly. That's the way to do it.
I'm thinking Gigi might just make it.
Carlin, we'll talk again next Sunday. It'll be around about game four, game five, and we may know a result, we may not.
Yeah, maybe over by then, guys. Let's hope not, though. Fingers crossed.
Good on you, mate. Thank you.
Thanks, Carlin
Gay joining us from NBA Australia. We'll take a break. And when we come back, we're talking some soccer. But on the way to the break, Phil Mickelson set to withdraw from the one major championship that has eluded him, that, of course, is the US Open, to go to his daughter's graduation.
There you go.
Good
it's
on you,
sort
mate.
Of the thing and you Jason do when Day, your father.
And Jason Day shot a 5-under-67 to move up the leaderboard at the PGA Tour's Memorial Tournament. But it's Mark Leishman who's the best Australian at 4-under the card in that tournament. We'll take a break. Talking soccer in just a tick.
11-16 SEN, the ultimate wrap with Tony Shebeki.
I knew you were saying Lee and not Milligan.
Yeah, no, I said Spike Milligan, of course, the great British comedian. Spike Lee is who I meant, the famous producer.
Yeah.
Music producer.
And huge Yankees fan. Thank you very much.
Yeah, he is too, and also a massive Knicks fan. In the cricket, the Champions Trophy, it was South Africa, 6-299, defeating Sri Lanka, all out for 203. So the South Africans looking good. Hashim Amla, 103, not out. And Faf du Plessis, 75, not out. The two major scorers for the South Africans. Uma Thuranga making 57 for Sri Lanka, their best at bat. Let's talk some soccer, George, with thanks to Alpha Barbers, Melbourne Central Hardware Lane.
Have we got Flinders the new Lane. Channel 10 football commentator there?
Hang on a sec.
Or is he Fox commentator?
No, he's Fox commentator. No, he's Fox at the moment. A new store in Spring Street also for Alpha Barbers. Michael Zapponi, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Do we Fox or 10? What do we
refer to? He's both. He's going to do both.
Well, Fox, of course. But I think, yeah, great news during the week that the A-League will be on Channel 10 and they'll be taking our...
It'll basically be a relay station, won't it, my boy?
I believe so, George.
They'll be taking the full box and dice, which is fantastic because the one thing all football fans want is a fabulous product, and you guys have been doing a magic job for the last half a dozen years. I mean, 12 years... you've been around, but I reckon the last 6 years, the product's just got better and better and better and deserves a huge audience, and I trust it will be, my friend. So,
yeah,
good luck.
Saturday nights will be big, and, it's great, as you said, George, for those who haven't got Foxtel to start to get more exposure for the A-League.
Watch it on 10.
Good for the sport, yeah, for sure.
Hey, speaking of watching things, can I just say, I never imagined I would see an Italian side defend so poorly as Juventus did this morning.
Yeah, well, I've got to just put it out there firstly that I'm a Juventus fan.
I know,
we know that.
So this is going to be hard,
painful
for me to do. But you're right, George. They conceded three goals all tournament, leading into the final, and that was certainly one of their strengths. But this morning, Real Madrid were just too good. And 1-1 at half-time. The game was still in the balance, but there was really only one team in the contest in the second half. And say what you want about Cristiano Ronaldo. Some people don't like the way he goes about it, and sometimes it's all about him. But when it comes to the big occasions, he just proves time and time again that he is the man. He scored twice again. This morning, and the first goal was a beautifully worked goal where once upon a time he might have taken a shot. He laid it off and set it up beautifully. It came back to him and he scored the opener and really set the scene. And Mario Mandzukic...
That was the goal of the game, mate.
Yeah,
Mandzukic.
The goal of the tournament.
Whoa!
It was a brilliant overhead kick. He controlled it on his chest and in one movement... flicked it over his head and beat Navas.
Just like you showed him in the training session, mate. Just like you showed him.
And you think, if anything was going to reignite Juventus, it should have been that goal. But, you know, Real Madrid were just way too strong. They dominated the second half. They dominated possession. And Juventus really couldn't get their foot on the ball in the second half.
They go down as one of the great teams of all time now, Real Madrid, don't they? 12 European Cup wins. That's
the first back-to-back.
Yeah, that's not a bad effort.
And Zinedine Zidane, the former Juventus player and former Real Madrid player, of course, his second season as coach, and he's won two Champions Leagues. It's not a bad result.
Well, he's done better than Pep Guardiola, mate.
And won the league this year as
exactly.
well. Exactly. So he's been a master tactician, and for a young coach, one of the things, I go back to 2 years' time, and 2 years ago, Juventus beat Real Madrid in the semi-final to qualify for that final against Barcelona. Juventus destroyed Real Madrid over those two legs. And that just, for me, shows the lengths Real have come along in the last couple of years. Tactically, they've been much better. Defensively, been much better as well. The criticism about Real leading into the final was, yeah, sure, they can score plenty, but they cop plenty at the other end as well. And this morning, they just didn't look like conceding goals. They were strong all over the park.
Yeah, they certainly were. Zappers, in 30 seconds, the Socceroos, a massive test for them this weekend. Oh, this week coming up, I should say.
Huge test for the Socceroos, yes. Saudi Arabia on Thursday at Adelaide Oval. It's pretty much a must-win game for Ange's men. If they don't win, a lot of pressure on them. They need to finish in that top two to be assured of a spot through to the next round, or to the World Cup, of course. And it's a big month. They've got Confederations Cup coming up as well in June and a game against Brazil to test themselves at the MCG in a couple of weeks' time, which will be fun to watch.
Good on you, Zappers. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it as always.
Thanks, boys.
Michael Zappone from Fox Sports with thanks to Alpha Barbers, Melbourne Central, Hardware Lane, Flinders Lane, and a new store there in Spring Street. With thanks to Northern Motor Group. George Zanikian, thank you.
Pleasure, mate. All the very best. See ya.
And see you in a couple of weeks' time.
Keep warm.
We're signing off. Finding Adam Cooney coming up next here on Inside Football, and plenty more to come as well with Live Footy. Fremantle up against Collingwood from 3 o'clock. Tim Gossage, Jack Crawshaw, and Paul Hazelby. We'll catch you next week. Till then.